special get together with Bill Tompkins tonight. We're talking about Hollywood and many other things as well. His father, S.M. Tompkins, literally a multimillionaire giant in the Hollywood film business, has it all taken away from him. He is, however, a 33-degree Mason and was doing some very strange things after that happened. And we're hearing about that right now with Bill. Bill, go ahead.
Okay, Jeff, I want to mention, too, that like he would be selling insurance out of a office on Wilshire Boulevard in Hollywood.
Right.
And so a couple of three times he would bring us, the two boys, with him and to the office. And I told you before that when you go to the back of that office, there was the stairway that went down. And, of course, it was much later that we found out that that was a connection to a cavern underneath Hollywood and Beverly Hills area.
Oh, my.
But other things that went on in that office, too, at two separate times with two different young ladies who my dad was sponsoring into actresses in Hollywood. The one time she had a fellow drive her to his office on Wilshire there, and she came in and he stayed in the car, and we were full rounding in the back, and so when we came out to the front of the office, he was talking to this beautiful girl. And then arrangements were made, and then he would pick her up and take her to one of the studios.
He being? And your dad?
Yeah, my dad. Okay. And then they had the photographs of her and which had been taken already, and then a couple of times it was for another meeting with the first lady. They had to get some sort of a special dress that they had to go get, and I know that my dad paid for it, okay, because they left us out in the street by the car, and they go into this expensive women's clothing place, and my dad and the young lady, and it was 2 hours we were waiting, and that's another thing. Whenever we went with him, it was with us trying to figure out what we can do as two boys to stay out of trouble, I guess. Because he just leaves us. And
are you in this great big 7-passenger car at this time?
No, not that that's the point,
okay.
No.
All right.
But I just want to say there were two separate ladies that he sponsored.
To try to get into the business.
Actresses.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah. And that we knew of. Okay, there may have been more. But again, with that big 7-passenger car, and this was a little earlier, we drove to San Diego, and he met with these people in the Ryan Aircraft Company in San Diego, and they built the Spirit of St. Louis, which, of course, that
Lindbergh.
Airplane was Lindbergh's airplane, and so we're walking all around that facility, and they actually, while he was at business, he had another fellow that took us all the way, all over the plant, my brother and I. While my dad is off doing whatever he does. And so then they, we come back again to the offices, and then we turned and left the office, three of us, and the three of us and a fourth man who was a pilot, and he took us out to the runway area where where they had what was essentially a four-passenger version of the Spirit of St. Louis.
Hmm.
And I guess they used that for testing before, but at this time they used it, I guess, for marketing.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the pilot gets my dad and my brother and I. Mom wasn't with us on that one. And we took off from Lindbergh Field there, and we flew all over San Diego when I was just a kid. And then one of the people in, there was a manager of some type, in Ryan,
mm-hmm.
Had one of the Hollywood young ladies that he was tied in with. Maybe he was a relative of the girl. And so she was there the day we were there, and my dad knew her. And so one of the executives in Ryan was also doing movies with the Ryan airplane. And so they were tied in with the Hollywood movie group, too. And there was, that had to have been what my dad's interest was there, but it could have been something else. All I'm trying to say is all these different places that we would be taken with my dad, and sometimes out of school. We don't even go to school
right.
that day.
Mm-hmm.
Were completely different than a normal family.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Totally different. And for us not to have money to get good clothes, good shoes, and everything, to me, it didn't bother me. But when we stopped and my brother and I talked about it, it was kind of, gee, Dad's got another new car, you know? And wow, he was obviously, what was he doing so much with banking? Okay. Why would we spend so much time walking around the bank building?
Why would he take you boys to so many places when he could have left you in school? Did he want to spend time with you? Is that part of it?
I think it was, but if there had to have been something else, and both my brother and I have never answered that question. We can't figure why.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fit, but obviously it had an agenda of some sort.
Right.
And when you try to sit down and ask your question, all these different things that we were doing were cover-ups that he was doing, were cover-ups of just bringing enough money to keep us running. And he's off doing all this other stuff. One day we went to what was where the Los Angeles airport is now, that same area. There was uh-huh. an airfield there.
Right.
And we drove Dad, and my mom was with us on that. And we drove out to the airport, and he got his tickets. And before he boarded, some executive of the airline that my dad was talking to, he knew this fellow. And so he had one of the ladies there take my brother and I into this big Ford transport, which had three engines. And somebody else built it later on, but I think Ford built the original high-wing three-engine
mm-hmm.
job.
Mm-hmm.
And we got in, and we sat down in the seats, and we went up and sat down in the pilot seat and the co-pilot seat with this lady with us, and showing us everything about the airplane. And then the meeting was over, and we were late getting back. And Dad had another meeting that he was supposed to go to, and that flight was canceled. Something else came up, and he was going to fly in that airplane when the normal flight would have gone to someplace in the country. Another telephone call, whatever it was, and he didn't take off and fly. And that was what he was supposed to do that morning.
Hmm.
So there was strange situations which normal kids would not be exposed to.
Now, these are endless strange situations, very mysterious. And, wow.
And
Hollywood starlets, a beautiful mom, a mysterious dad, new cars, and still no money for basically life's essences to speak of. Very, very thin budget.
And I told you about later on when we were both at Hollywood High School.
Uh-huh.
And that was my first year. And that summer, the summer before that, we worked for Gans, a plastic company just off of Hollywood Boulevard.
Right.
They make plastic doorknobs for houses.
Uh-huh.
And in that big, long apartment, just a half a block off of Hollywood Boulevard on the north side, east side, we had this big, long apartment, which was upstairs. And it obviously had been a very expensive apartment before, but it was a little bit run down. And my mom had these dads working, and like on Saturday and Sunday, we'd hang out around the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom would call us into the, it's sort of like a family room because they had a living room too, and three bedrooms. And so she would go into her bedroom and come out in one of these expensive dresses that she had worn when they had money.
Yeah.
And she had these, and she had, I bet she had 15 of those.
Mm-hmm.
She managed, because we had no furniture now, okay? Everything else is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, in one of the storage areas, she got this box full of her clothes and the shoes before we didn't pay the rent for it, and they take everything.
Mm-hmm.
So she had these dresses, and she would model these dresses. And they weren't mini skirts, but they were like shorter dancing dresses.
Mm-hmm.
for the 20s, I guess. These expensive shoes.
Uh-huh.
And expensive looking necklaces, which the good ones were all sold, and these were just the inexpensive ones. And she would model this, twist around, sort of dance around, and that made her feel good because she was remembering what it was when we had money.
Showing this to the kids, to her children. Fascinating.
To the two boys. And it was fun for her.
Oh, sure. I understand.
I'm just saying that, of course, Dad is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he left early in the morning, or maybe he hadn't come back from an overnight meeting.
Wow.
But it's just a different sort of an atmosphere for a kid to get.
I guess.
To grow up in.
Yeah.
Now, I never did know. I was too young to know the good stuff. My older brother did know a little bit about it when they had money. But, mm-hmm. You know, I never knew anything but depression area.
Got it. You know, I'm just struck, Bill, by the enormity of the outrageous treatment given to your father. There's something going on. This is obviously an enormously big and complex story. You're doing a wonderful job telling us. But what the hell was going on with this man?
Well,
where was he going all these times? What was he doing? These are questions I don't expect you to answer, but they're bothering me here just listening.
Yeah, well, and of course, you never did know. And like I've said, neither my brother or I knew my dad was a 33-level Freemason.
Uh-huh.
And that was never, we found out after he died, and the second wife had the ring. And wife's mother, who liked to buy and sell jewelry and a lot of other stuff.
Uh-huh.
She took it to a hawk shop and sold it for some ridiculous amount of money.
No,
And lost it. and we didn't know what it was. Nobody. It's just another ring with a whole bunch of hieroglyphics on it.
Uh-huh.
And we're just kids.
Right.
So it wasn't done purposely. It's just it was someplace you could make some more money to kind of help out.
I understand.
But this thing of continually some sort of association back with Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And in different aspects, not mm-hmm. just with the trying to get the girls in. Mm-hmm. There was a tie between Ryan Aeronautico, mm-hmm. Them making movies about airplanes, of course, mm-hmm. and about other stuff related to that. And ties with directors and movie organizations back in Hollywood again. And my dad's association with that, you know, like years after he lost the money.
The industry, Bill, the industry, the community must have known very well what had happened to your father, the outrage that he was broke, and yet he still had to put up or was being given the support to put up a front, new cars, good clothes, still involved somehow. Something was going on here. I'm just guessing, but something was going on.
Not just something, something extremely important, some agenda, okay? And it had to be really important for him to not do his normal job of trying to sell insurance or whatever.
Yeah.
And the continuous situation with banks, this never made any, because we didn't have money, mm-hmm. so why are you spending all this time in these banks? And he would be in there for like 4 and 5, 6 hours.
Wow.
Wow. They would have lunches brought for us. We're now in the back of the bank and in the little conference room back there. We mm-hmm. have our lunches. And what are they doing for that many hours
mm-hmm.
in the bank?
Mm-hmm.
What was that all about? Wow.
Yeah. Mind-boggling. I just couldn't even guess. But it was something big, I would suggest. Knowing what happened to you in your life, to the degree that I do, you were on a fast track at a very young age to engage in the most top secret experiences you could or any other American could engage in. So something's going on. Your dad, I don't want to go where I'm not supposed to go, but it seems to me that your dad or your mom, and you mentioned something earlier, which I'm not going to go back into, were involved with something that is so unusual that it defies description. And I have a vague guess at a remote idea of what that something might have been.
What do you think?
Well, I think Mom was a very special mom for a lot of different reasons. I'll leave it at that.
Yes, I think that's true, too. And very, very difficult to understand.
Yeah.
Because you have to look at the pictures of her and her sisters.
You must have those pictures. I would really love to see those at some time. I know they're very private, but she gave birth to you, Bill. There's some heritage there, some DNA, genetic something that is different. Yeah. You're different. You're not normal. Never have been, never will be. So there's something there. Don't know what it is.
But there's thousands of people, okay, on this planet that are very, they're either direct Nordics or they're families of Nordics.
Right. Got it.
And we're lucky for that. We got that going on our side, and this is going to fix most of our problems.
Well, right? Sure hope it does, yeah.
But even
Did your mom, Bill, one other question. Did your mom, after your dad passed, did she ever sit you down? I mean, they were aware of your extraordinary position in the Navy. Did mom ever talk to you in private about things?
Never. Okay. And that, again, was somehow, like you asked the question, okay, are just men Freemasons? I don't understand that part either. But never, okay? Never disclosed how that was all put together. Now, you have to remember, too, that one time when we were really broke, we moved in, my mom and dad, my brother and I, into Uncle Harding's big house there in Santa Monica.
Whose house?
So that's where I got the education, and my brother got some of it, I think.
Whose house was that again, Bill, please?
Uncle Harding's house.
Okay? Uncle Harding,
and
all right.
He's the doctor. He's mm-hmm. a surgeon. Chief right. Surgeon's Monica Hospital, okay? Mm-hmm. He's got this mm-hmm. great big house. And so we lived there for almost a year, okay, mm-hmm. when we didn't have any money for a rent. Mm-hmm. But while we're there, Uncle Harding goes back over to Egypt again and negotiates under the table to bring some more stuff back.
Antiquities?
Yes, and so that places his jam. When he gets back, and he's just got a few little items, mm-hmm. but then, like, 3-4 years later, the trucks come, okay? Now, we went to school during the week there, but when the truck would come, like, on a Saturday morning, okay, it was a big truck full of all boxed Egyptian artifacts. And name anything you want to name, including King Tut's chair, wooden chair, okay? Which wow. he manages, Uncle Harding mm-hmm. managed to negotiate a method to get these things illegally out of the
Egypt.
Country over
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And end up having them shipped back to his house. So the hallways would be to the ceiling almost of this stuff. And they had several people would come in and they would sort of mark this stuff and write stuff about it. Uh-huh. And then within a couple of weeks, 80% of it was gone. I don't know where it went, what happened to it, where it went, okay? Yeah, but he retained many, many artifacts all over the house, and thousands and thousands and thousands of photographs. I couldn't believe it. Now, in my book, Selected by Extraterrestrials, there's a picture of my Uncle Harding and my Aunt Bertie, his wife, on camels with three of the pyramids in the background and a UFO next to one of the pyramids. Wow.
Wow, indeed.
This has got to be...
This is mind-boggling stuff. Indeed.
Yeah, if you just take that one subject, if you just took that one subject, who was he and what was he doing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because he's spending every nickel he can come up with, and it's expensive back then even to fly over there, and he'd be gone, you know, for 3 or 4 weeks. Well, that means he wasn't doing any operations for 3 or 4 weeks.
That's
and how
right.
many times can he do that and not get fired?
Right. So you remember seeing King Tut's chair, Bill?
Well, the big joke was that was his chair. Now, it was somebody's real high-level chair, okay?
Uh-huh.
But it was, they called it that King Tut's chair.
Sure.
But it has all these carvings on it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, hieroglyphics.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen another chair like that. I have one photograph where you can see my Uncle Harding standing next to the fireplace and with my cousin Walter, that was, I've told you about him, standing with Uncle Harding, and the chair is right next to him. So don't tell me he didn't have that chair. He really had that chair, and I got a photograph of it.
Well, you must have some amazing photographs.
Well, I'm only saying that's another whole story
mm-hmm.
about him.
Mm.
And was he a 33 level?
What was his first name again, please?
John.
And, John Dr. John Harding, all right?
Yeah. And I'll get you some information on him, and it would be interesting to sort of look up that family. But I'm trying to say, Jeff, is that from the listener's standpoint,
mm-hmm.
There weren't very many people at that time managing to get that much equipment out of the country, particularly, that was had to be against the law.
Still is.
Right, still is. So he had, again, some additional influence or capability, more than an average person at least, to be able to get the stuff out of there. And
it sounds very Masonic to me. Very high
level. It does
levels.
To me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but it's you had to believe the photographs, and then he has these little photo holders, and back then they're made of wood, and you hold it up, and you have one photograph in there, and then it shows up on either side, and it shows you the picture in three dimensions, and he must have had a dozen of those, and continually, mm-hmm. there he and other people are in the house. They're mostly in the kitchen and sometimes in the his office in the house, and they're going over these photographs. And we're laying on the floor, my brother and I, looking at the funny papers. Okay, and these men, along with Uncle Harding, are in the office and sometimes in the big kitchen. Going over hundreds of photographs.
Are they talking money? That? Are they talking money, deals? Do you recall any of that? Or were they just talking about the actual objects?
They were talking about the objects. I guess I never heard money being mm-hmm. mentioned. Maybe they didn't want to do it in front of the family or the kids.
Right.
But I never heard anything there. But what I'm trying to say, there's thousands of photographs down inside, and not just of the walls, but of all different kinds of paintings on the walls,
mm-hmm.
and extremely good lighting. I couldn't mm-hmm. believe some of the lighting background that they had in some of those rooms,
mm-hmm.
and all of the different areas which they were still uncovering back then, around the Sphinx and around the pyramids.
Right.
They were still digging all around it.
I think they may still be digging. There's supposedly that secret chamber under the Sphinx. I've forgotten which paw, but the rumor is you remove the blocks from one of the toes of the Sphinx, and you can go down into this chamber, and in that chamber, allegedly, were the records of Atlantis and other ancient heritage that we have. It's all been looted now by the powers that be, of course, but it was supposed to be there at one point.
Yes. Well, Jeff, even I would say they had at least 300 or 400 photographs of tunnels. And the way that the photographer did it, they photographed the chamber, then the area in the side of the chamber that went to a tunnel.
Uh-huh.
Then they walked it down through this tunnel to all of these other areas, and then came out of them, still underneath the ground, and going to other tunnels with other structures, all of it underground.
Wow.
So it was, the cameraman had to have walked, I would say, at least 6 or 7 blocks underground to different chambers.
And we know nothing about all this today.
What was this? And so I'm saying it's not just a couple of photographs of Uncle Harding and his wife on the camels as tourists. They weren't tourists. That's the only time she came with him.
It's a massive archaeological treasure down there, clearly.
Yes, right. And like you say, we're still learning today about what's there. And again, what's behind the pyramids?
Right.
And the deciphering of the hieroglyphics. There were hundreds and hundreds of photographs of the hieroglyphics.
Uh-huh.
And they'd have 50 of these photographs on the big table in the kitchen. Great big long table.
Hmm.
And they'd have stacked with them. And Uncle Harding would be there with at least 2 other fellows, sometimes 3.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going over these photographs with magnifying glasses.
Do you recall them ever arguing?
Their discussions got warm.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay.
They sometimes did. The door would close to the kitchen if they were there, so we could hear what was being said.
Mm-hmm.
And if we went there to get a drink of water, my aunt or one of the others would bring the water out to us, so we didn't go in the kitchen.
Wow.
I think you could write a book about him, because there was so much of the different types of artifacts,
mm-hmm.
and the
hieroglyphs.
Thousands and thousands of photographs for what? Who's doing this?
It sounds like more than just a looting and selling of Egyptian antiquities. It sounds like more was going on here.
I was convinced that's not what it was.
Right.
It was way more than that.
Yeah.
These were studies. Yeah. They were. As soon as the latest photographs came, two of the men that came and one lady once in a while, the four of them would get together, and they didn't look at any of the artifacts. They went immediately to the photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like 3-ring binder type of the old type document holders.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have at least 6 or 8 boxes around of the photographs. And they would take these out and they would study these photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked my uncle myself, and he said, "We're trying to figure out the hieroglyphics. That's what we're trying to do."
And he did say that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And but it was more than that. Okay,
mm-hmm.
it was more than that.
Sounds like to me they may have known and understood some of the hieroglyphs, and they were working on a higher agenda here. I think just from what you're saying. This is very eclectic stuff.
Well, remember, I'm trying to describe it as what a kid saw.
Sure.
Okay.
How old were you, Bill, at that time? It's the early 30s, I guess.
Well, I was born in 23, so, you know.
9, 10-ish, something like that?
Yeah. And it was almost a full year that we lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was going on like there would be just the stuff that's left around the house,
right.
Okay? And then...
were you allowed to touch any of these things, pick them up, look at them under supervision?
Some of them they let us touch. Others they would not even allow us close to it. Because the word was that, like my mom saying, you know, those are dirty. They've never cleaned those. And, you don't want to touch those.
I see.
But that wasn't what it was.
Uh-huh.
They didn't want us to handle them and leave our, you know, our dirty kids' hands on them. To me, the most important thing was the thousands of photographs. This was unreal.
Mm-hmm.
And, a couple of times they had photographs spread almost all of the floor in the living room, and they would line the photographs back to that tunnel thing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They would walk you through this tunnel with the photographs on the floor, and they would discuss this. They would discuss the different chambers, the first chamber, and then two entrances out of that chamber into two other tunnels. And they would have the photographs all over the floor, so you could walk with them, the guy that took the pictures, to the different chambers.
Oh, I get it. It's like you're on a tour. You're down there with them. This is really remarkable.
Well, no, really, that had to be remarkable.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's it had nothing to do with somebody going over there to look at the pyramids. Nothing at all. This was research at a very, very high level for some staggering agendas.
Mm-hmm. Where was your father during this time? Did he ever participate in any of this Egyptology stuff? Or was he left out of that?
He was left out of that completely. Mm-hmm. I never saw him with... just a couple of times he would be looking at it, but he was never in any of the meetings with the three of them or the four of them.
Mm-hmm.
So he was not involved in that. In fact, he wouldn't be there. And again, just my brother and I and my mom would be there. He would be someplace else most of the time.
The mysterious dad. Most mysterious.
And you say, well, okay, he got fired, but then I guess he didn't get fired.
No, he was. He sounds like he was pulled upstairs to some level that was very important, and it cut across a lot of different lines. This is a very mobile man who was doing big things, connecting very powerful people. This is remarkable.
Very strange.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating. To me, as a kid, I learned all about Egypt. No kidding. I mean, was an education. And even my brother and I, for years, you know, we talk about what we learned.
Have you ever gone there?
No, I've never been there.
Probably felt like you almost didn't need to go. You already knew. A lot of stuff. That's very interesting. We have, Bill, just so you know, about 10 minutes, and wherever you want to take this, we should probably move in that direction.
Okay. I would like a quick one if we
go ahead.
Can do it in 10
Absolutely.
Minutes.
Sure.
Michael Salas, Dr. Salas, has written all these books, and he's a real smart guy. Anyway, a friend of his mailed him a book, and it's about 18 inches high, and I guess it's like 10 and 11 inches wide. And it's blue, and it's a covered book. It's got a cloth all over it. And has a U.S. Navy's pilot's wings in gold at the top. And down the bottom, it says U.S. Naval Air Station, San Diego, California. And when you get into it, there's notes in here of the one fellow that is trying to get. Well, I could read it. It says, "Dear Michael Saw, this book in your research with Bill Tompkins in some way assists your efforts in process of disclosure. And this book belonged to my father," gives the guy's name, "and he worked for 20 years at Naval Air Station San Diego." And so what it is, it's all photographs, almost, some writing, but it's the closest date looks like 43, 44. And essentially, they had both civilian personnel working at the base and military. And so this book is broken down to the combat type training as one area, and then the overhaul and reconstruction of the airplanes, which constitutes, I would say, 60-70% of the book. Now, in here is you got Admiral Nimitz and all the top guys at the beginning of it. And then you have Admiral Riccobata. He's in here. And that part is broken down to would be A&R, which is erection and maintenance, okay? And so the, actually, and there's photographs of all the officers and their ranks. But the interesting thing is that in the Navy at that time, this during World War II, it was sort of strange. A fellow could have a lieutenant commander's actual title and responsibility and still just be a lieutenant. And then in other cases, you could be a Navy captain, and you've actually been upgraded to admiral.
What is the purpose of this book, Bill?
Well, it's just a book about all of the Navy personnel at North Island Naval Air Station, San Diego.
This is a one-off book. Somebody put this together, just a one-off. It wasn't published and made as a...
Was it distributed? It was distributed. Okay. It's not a classified book.
All right.
And it's just a normal book, and it gives the titles of some. And so many of, like three of the fellows in the engineering department. One guy is security, and he's... listed as commander, not as captain. Okay. And but when I was there, he was a captain, and but the records didn't show that yet. And because you got upgraded so fast, even Admiral Riccobata, when he went from commander to captain, he almost skipped the captain and went to a one-star admiral. And that was sort of something that was, I guess, accepted. Okay?
Okay.
So anyway, some of these people's titles are different than what they really were. Okay? So because they'd already been upgraded and they're already being called whatever. So you have all the officers, and then you've got all of the enlisted personnel.
Right.
That are in the erection and maintenance part of North Island, which constitutes really 60% of all the people in this book.
Hmm.
And going through it, Michael wanted me to go through it and identify some of the people that I could recognize.
Yes.
And then he can put his people together and write letters to those people, the families, because these people are almost all dead.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then get some additional information about mm-hmm. what it was that Admiral Riccobata was doing.
Right.
And it's because Michael is very positive to getting the correct information.
Right.
In his books.
Well, Dr. Positive. Michael Salla has, if you look him up, you'll find the book. His website is there, Salla, Dr. Michael Salla.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that both Mary and I have gone through the book, and neither my brother or I are in this.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I told you earlier, a while back, that I have a copy someplace of a letter that my dad had written to the Navy mm-hmm. in Long Beach, stating that neither my brother or I could ever be sent to combat,
mm-hmm.
and that we would be immediately discharged at the end of hostilities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we have a Freemason writing a letter to a possible other Freemason,
right.
An
right.
admiral.
Right.
In the Navy. And so Billy Tompkins never was supposed to go to combat. And he had a mission.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The only thing that's interesting here is that there's no photographs. There is one photograph of Tompkins in here. I think he's a full commander. But that's the only one. Okay.
But that's not you.
And that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother. So here we have a document that is just about all of the personnel in Naval Air Station San Diego, World War II, 1943, and I'm not in there.
But that's not to say that Dr. Salla hasn't already found things through the Freedom of Information Act, which put you there and validate
your story.
Oh, yeah,
he's got
story.
All of the information, yeah. and yes. We have another photograph of me. I don't mm-hmm. think you'd seen that one, where I'm with four of the young ladies working in the photo shop.
No, I haven't seen that one. I want to see that one.
Okay.
Maybe Frank could share that.
Yeah. There's a $10 charge for
that's
this photograph.
Funny.
Okay.
That's fine. I'll
pay anyway, you can see my A&R badge. It says it right there.
Yeah.
And,
we're running out of time, Bill, so we've got to wrap it up here. Go ahead.
But we got to ask the question, why didn't it show up?
Yeah,
somebody
well, you were,
took it off.
You sure, you were left out with intent. There was a reason for that.
Yes.
Well, they probably wanted to cover up this debriefing, the whole depth of the espionage activity and the ET part of it. This is part of the cover-up.
Particularly the cover-up of the representatives.
Yes, indeed. Of which there were a lot, and in years to come, you were to meet quite a few of them and work with them, and we've talked about that in the past. Maybe next visit we can talk more about these people. Did you have any socializing with them? Did they ever invite you to parties? Did they ever do anything that made your ears stand up? As it were. I'm sure they
did. Well, every time that they spoke, you were fascinated.
Wow.
Because when they debriefed, every word that they said was unbelievable.
Wow. Well, let's talk about that in our next visit. That would be great. This has been an extraordinary look at a very, very unusual life of a child, a young man, a boy, and his brother, and a father who I am just fascinated with this. It's amazing how he went from the top all the way down to the bottom, but did he really go to the bottom? Sounds like he moved sideways at the behest of some very powerful people and was still deeply involved in some extraordinary things. Obviously. Something really amazing went on here. Thank you, Bill. Go get some sleep. And whenever you're ready to continue this, let's continue it. We've got many things to talk about. And I'd like to talk to you. Maybe we can talk. You let me know when it's a good time to call you, and I'll give you a call. We'll talk.
Okay. I would say call me anytime, Jeff.
Okay. All right. Very good.
We need to talk.
Okay. We will. I'll do it very soon. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Good luck to all your people.
Yeah. Thanks. They appreciate it. Okay. That's our program tonight. I told you it'd be different. And indeed it was, and it is. So it'll be in the archives for you to listen to any time at all. And we will be back tomorrow night, full schedule, and hope to have the pleasure of your company then. Good night.